Chapter 23, The Faithful Bishop of Constantinople. It is active in the large city of Antioch. The streets are filled with people. Just listen. Threatening shouts are heard. Fists are clenched. Thousands of people walk past the statue of the emperor. Looks, full of hatred, are cast upon that statue as if that piece of stone had done them harm. One roars, "Pull that thing down!" A loud shouting ascends from the furious crowd. Those words find approval everywhere. It is only a moment, and the heavy statue of the emperor falls with a thud to the ground. The ruffians cheer, shouting and raving. The foolish multitude move on. But what is the meaning of all this? Ah, a revolt has broken out in Antioch. The people of that city are dissatisfied because they have to pay such high taxes. That dissatisfaction has prevailed for a long time already, but when it became known that new taxes had been introduced, then the long pent-up hate and rage burst loose. They would no longer pay those high taxes. They would no longer do it. Now it was done. For that reason, the murmuring people march in a rage through the city. For that reason, they vent their rage upon that stone statue of the emperor. But finally, it becomes quiet in the city, because it is becoming dark. The agitators have gone home. However, in the days that follow this tumultuous day, the people come to their senses again. They begin to consider what they have done. Oh, sure, it is easy to make a lot of noise, to let out yells. To overturn the statue of the emperor is very simple. But, what shall the consequence of their unwise and thoughtless actions be? They have grievously offended the mighty emperor of the large Roman Empire. How angry he must be! And that emperor is Theodosius. Oh, they know that their emperor is so terribly quick-tempered. He does not allow himself to be insulted unpunished. Thessalonica has experienced that, because only a short time ago a revolt had broken out there too, and, with a rage which had no regard for anything, the imperial troops made havoc there. In the space of only 3 hours, 7,000 people, guilty and innocent, were cruelly murdered. In that city there was a massacre. When the people of Antioch thought of that, then they shuddered, and then an oppressive fear rises in their hearts. Shall the streets of Antioch also be colored red with the blood of thousands of people just like in Thessalonica? The people of Antioch tremble, and that is no wonder, because they really deserve punishment. Is there no help anywhere? Cannot that approaching disaster be averted? The fearful inhabitants direct their fearful hearts on high. God alone can help. Behold, there the houses of prayer are opened. The people throng to the church. The preacher stands on the pulpit. It becomes quiet. And then, listen, he reproves the people severely for their sins. He tells them that they must turn from their evil way. It is breathlessly quiet in the large building. The thousands listen attentively to the reproving and warning words which are spoken to them from the pulpit. Poor people, Thus it sounds through the large church. You fear the vengeance of the earthly judge. But do you not fear and tremble before the wrath and just punishment of the heavenly judge? You tremble at the thought of the vengeance of your emperor. But how shall you fare if the vengeance of an angry God shall strike you? Shall you then be able to exist if the righteous judge of heaven and earth shall summon you before his fearful judgment seat? Thus the preacher continues for some time. Silently and deeply impressed by that which they have heard, the numerous multitude return home, but the fear remains within their hearts. Yet the apprehensive inhabitants of Antioch shall experience that the Lord is a hearer of prayer, and that he shall never put to shame those that flee to him in truth, even though it is only judgmentally. The bishop of Antioch travels to Constantinople. At his urgent request, he is admitted to the angry emperor. He asks pardon for the inhabitants of his city, and the emperor listens obligingly to the bishop. He grants the requested pardon. Did he perhaps recall to mind the inhumane, cruel punishment of Thessalonica? We do not know. Greatly relieved, the bishop hastens back to Antioch. How glad are the people of that city! That threatened disaster has been averted. Perhaps you will ask, who was that preacher who spoke to them from the pulpit, preaching so earnestly and admonishingly? He was no bishop, but a presbyter or elder. In those days, the elders also preached when it was necessary. Everyone in Antioch knew him. Everyone in Antioch loved him. His name was John, but because he could speak so well, they soon called him Chrysostom, which means golden mouth. John was born in the year 347 at Antioch. His father died already when he was still very young. He was brought up by his pious mother. It was soon evident that John had received a bright mind. He studied at various schools, and he became a learned man. Besides, he feared the Lord early in life. Hence, it did not take long before he became deacon. Afterward, he was chosen as presbyter or elder. In Antioch, he was generally honored and beloved. He could sternly reprimand the people about their sins, but yet they loved him. They realized that he did it in all uprightness. He served the church in Antioch for 16 years, and when he preached, then the people thronged together in the church. Even Jews and heathens often came to listen to him because he could preach so earnestly. It is not surprising that John was not only mentioned in Antioch, but even far in the distance, and when the bishop of Constantinople died, John was appointed as bishop of that imperial city. How glad he must have been, because was that not a great honor to him? Oh no, he was not pleased at all with his appointment, because he did not seek his own honor. Besides, he loved the church at Antioch, and he did not want to part with them. He felt himself at home in Antioch. But he was almost forced to accept that appointment, and John moved from Antioch to Constantinople, the capital, with a heavy heart, because there the emperor with his courtiers dwelled. In the beginning, things went very well. The Empress Eudoxia was a great friend of the new bishop, and she supported him in all things. She had insisted that he should come to Constantinople because she knew that he could preach so well, and she heard him gladly. John Chrysostom did not have it very easy in Constantinople. That imperial city was a beautiful city, but also a very wicked city. The prominent court ladies lived in the greatest sins. However, John himself lived very plain, and he was an example to all in piety. He took no part in the wicked feasts, which were kept there so often. On the contrary, he openly rebuked the sins of the prominent men and women in Constantinople. He spared no one, but without respect of persons, he announced the judgments of God to them if they continued in their sins. John Chrysostom gained many friends in Constantinople. Especially the common people listened breathlessly to his admonishing and reproving preaching. The people loved their bishop, but he also gained many enemies. He who wants to be honest and sincere always gets enemies. The most distinguished of the city were especially his enemies, because they were rebuked time and again because of their wicked life. Finally, the court ladies began to hate him, and they tried everything to get rid of that annoying bishop. Also, the Empress Eudoxia became hostile-minded toward him because the stern bishop did not spare her either. History tells us that she had taken by force a field from a poor widow. Chrysostom hears of that. Promptly, on the following Sunday, he speaks about Jezebel, the wicked queen of Israel, who had Naboth stoned to obtain his vineyard for Ahab, her husband. The empress was also in church. When she heard those words, she turned pale. She noticed that some looked at her stealthily. That was too much for her proud and haughty heart. A wild hatred flared up in her. She will silence that mouth. He must disappear from Constantinople. Various other bishops from the imperial city and from surrounding places are also hostile-minded toward Chrysostom, because he did not spare them either when they did wrong things. One time he had deposed several bishops because they were not faithful in their labors. Well then, the enraged empress seeks support from those dissatisfied bishops, and they are glad to help her. Naturally, a council convened in a small place close to Constantinople. At that council, Chrysostom is vehemently accused of various things which were contrary to the truth. Those accusations were based upon lying and deceit. Although John Chrysostom defended himself, yet they would not listen to him, and he is deposed. Besides, he must leave Constantinople. Thus, he was banished. That is an unjust sentence. Great is the emotion of the people when they learn that their beloved bishop must leave Constantinople. He ascends the pulpit in the overcrowded church for the last time. Amidst a breathless silence, he informs the congregation that he is innocent and that he is innocently banished. After that, he voluntarily permits himself to be led away by the imperial soldiers. But the people assume a threatening attitude. One word from Chrysostom, and a revolt shall break loose. But the banished bishop does not avenge himself, because of the revilement done to him, he exhorts the people to be quiet and calm. However, after he has left Constantinople, then the revolt nevertheless burst loose. There is fierce fighting in the streets. The imperial soldiers are forced to go out of the church by the embittered populace. There are dead and wounded. Then something happens by which the empress is made afraid. What really happened is not exactly known. Some writers tell us that an earthquake caused the imperial palace to tremble upon its foundations. Whatever it may be, the empress thinks that the vengeance of God pursues her. She sends several messengers after the departing bishop with the message that he may come back. After much searching, they finally find Chrysostom, and he is immediately willing to retrace his steps. Elated with joy, the people go out to meet him. With cheers, he is received again, and soon Chrysostom again stands on the pulpit of the large Sophia Church. Peace has returned to Constantinople again. There is a festival in Constantinople. The streets are full of cheerful people. There is singing and dancing. Everywhere banquets are given. The populace amuse themselves with all sorts of games. Oh? Why? What is the cause of that? Just go and look at the large Sophia Church. There stands a beautiful statue of Empress Eudoxia. It glitters and sparkles in the rays of the sun because that statue is made of silver, and the pedestal upon which the statue has been placed is constructed of red, brown, and purple stone. The empress is proud of that statue, and when it is finished and it shall be unveiled, then the empress gives a feast to the people. Such a thing may not pass by unnoticed. Of course not. Eudoxia wants the entire population to praise and honor her. For that reason, there is merry feasting. But that is not according to the mind of Chrysostom, and he warns against that wicked feasting. This veneration of the empress goes much too far. This is to the dishonor of God. From the pulpit, he reprimands both people and government. That rouses the rage of the distinguished ones in the city. Doesn't that fellow want us to have anything at all? Is a little feasting not allowed either? That is plainly laughable. The hatred against the preacher burst loose again. Another synod is called together, and at that synod Chrysostom is deposed for the second time and banished. And now, for good. On the 20th of June of the year 404, he leaves the city for the second time, being carried away by cruel soldiers who know no mercy. But that same evening, the sky is colored red by the flames of a terrible fire. The beautiful Sophia Church goes up in flames and is soon changed into a smoking heap of rubble. Perhaps the friends of Chrysostom have set fire to the church, but this cannot be said with certainty. Yet the departing bishop was not called back. Oh no, Eudoxia has him taken away to the utmost border of the empire. He spent 3 years in banishment, and during those 3 years he suffered terribly. Although he had a weak body, yet they made him walk for hours on a stretch through frigid cold and scorching heat. He had to face that chilly climate bareheaded. At times he was in danger of succumbing to weariness. Then he was beaten and maltreated by the cruel soldiers and forced to go further. He had to suffer many hardships. All this was too much for his weak strength. Besides, he was no longer young. He was 60 years old already. Time after time, his place of banishment was changed because many of his friends came to visit him in his banishment, and his enemies would not even grant this to him. Empress Eudoxia especially could not bear that even one looked at him, and as a result he was carried ever further away. Then he had to cover endless distances on foot. When he could go no more, due to exhaustion, then he was pushed roughly by those cruel soldiers who hesitated for nothing. In one of those tiresome marches, they came past a little church. Since he was at the end of his strength and laboriously stumbled on with great difficulty, he begged the soldiers if he could rest a while in that little church. That was denied by his torturers. He must go onward. Rough and without pity, they dragged him along. Totteringly, he tried to walk further. But a little further, he collapsed due to exhaustion. Now the soldiers were compelled to return to that little church which they had just passed. There he died on September 14 in the year 407 A.D. His last words were, "God be praised in all things." There they have also buried him. There the weary wanderer at last found rest. Now then, Eudoxia and the great ones in Constantinople may be easy. They will no longer hear his warning, admonishing voice. But all that is recorded in the book of God's omniscience, and in the day of days they shall have to render an account before the righteous God of all their wicked deeds. However, for Chrysostom the strife and trouble had ended. God took him to himself in glory. Yet his body did not remain in that remote place. 30 years after his death, he has been restored in honor. His body has been carried to Constantinople, and there he is buried in the beautiful new cathedral, which was built upon the spot of the burned Sophia Church. There his bones rest until the last day. The Lord will give grace and glory to them that walk uprightly before him, even though the honor comes 30 years after death.